Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SAP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just reminder how to join us for talk every Thursday starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to Talk Show website at www.talkshoe.com. And you can search for call ID 17702 or Starfleet Universe On Call. Either one, you will find us. And of course, we also co-broadcast over at twitch.tv. So if you want to join us there, that's great. It's just go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is SFUOnCall@gmail.com. That's SFUONCALL@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, feel free. The podcast Twitter account is SFUOnCall, same spelling as the email address, except for no at gmail.com. I got my personal account, which is Paul Franz. So if you want to follow me, that's great. It's PAULFRANZ. So it's a reminder. Love baseball and definitely an O's fan, a suffering O fan at the moment. And I'm very proud to be Catholic, and I love all kinds of tech. And, of course, you have the tertiary account, which is Franz Games. So if you want to follow what's going on with Franz Games, feel free. It's relatively quiet, so it's not going to overwhelm your feed, like, as if I post that much either. So, either one. So, moving on to the news from A to B, we, of course, this is the first week of the month. So what does that mean? Shapeways! So Shapeways Minis, we have an interesting collection from A to B, and that is, there's quite a few of the tanks and stuff for ground combat, which is really awesome in my mind. I love the idea, because I think that'd be awesome to have, which is a whole collection of ground units for doing ground combat for Starfleet Marines. I think that'd be really neat to do. Maybe you can get a larger maps, you know, blow it up and have what they have for F&E. You know, have those kind of limited maps available for Starfleet Marines. Now, the tough part about that at the moment, I don't think they're going to do that just because of there's no money in it. F&E, that's a very rabid crowd. I don't think at the moment Starfleet Marines will actually be able to do that until that number of people play Starfleet Marines and it becomes very more popular. I think that they probably won't be able to do that. But getting back to what they released, Federation had the M190 tanks, the M5 SPVs, and M8 SCEVs, got the M3 ground combat vehicles, got the M7 ground weapons vehicles, M6 ground assault vehicles, and the M4 armored personal vehicles. And also some other more out there ships with the Budave, I think I got that right, the strike cruiser, heavy cruiser, light cruiser, battle frigate, and proof frigate, and destroyer. And for the Carnivon, they just added the Dreadnought, and the Fleet Corps collection, you know, which is a collection of many different ships from the Carnivon, you know, whole idea of having a fleet in a box kind of thing. Back for those of you who remember the old miniatures, where they actually that was a thing, which is fleet in a box. They have one, I think one destroyer, one dreadnought, one cruiser, things like that into a collection, and you buy that whole collection. Moving on to the Starfleet Battles Online, we just started signups for the latest Sapphire Star tournament. So it costs you $10. So there is a prize at the end, and also, you know, but you know, and if you will, all you have to win back your $10, just win the first round. After you win the first round, you're golden. You don't have to worry about it anymore. And so sign up. There's only 16 slots, so the first 16 get in. We already have 3 slots filled, so it means only 13. I will probably be sending out an email blast this weekend to remind people that it is open now. So come and join us. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, someone old Paul Friends, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you got me, you got Barry, you got David, he's also here. And it looks like we are in business on Twitch, which is good. This one, I was concerned there that the new streaming key that I copied from Twitch into my OBS wouldn't work. Because, big dummy me, I didn't test it beforehand. I had a little time earlier this evening, and I should have done it then. Okay, Russ, my papa, I'm just to let the hold on, Barry, I'll bring you in just a moment. But just want to reply here to Russ, who's in the Twitch chat, and he said that basically he's still working on some of the content that he promised 2 or 3 weeks ago. Obviously, Russ has got a day job, so you know he's doing this on the little amount of time he actually has to himself. So thank you for Russ for working on what you're doing. And just thanking me for sending him the archive of the conversation, which was interesting. Conversation with when it comes to Call of the Fire versus pure impulse activity. And he's working on understanding exactly what the Call for Fire folks are expecting, want to be able to do either Call for Fire or Dull Blast. Well, actually, my understanding of Russ of what people want is they wanted to simulate real life. They want it so that it feels like real life, where you do a call for fire. You know, so basically they want me to add in something which is not in there, in the whole rule book, which is a call for fire segment. And I've been very resistant to that. What I've just had people do is take the Dizzy Dev one, which is when you activate the displacement device, there's a segment before fire decision that you have to announce that you're going to use the Dizzy Dev and you know which direction that it's going to be on the given the shield of the Andromeda ship that's come if it's going to be you know going that way. So, people have been using that. And I said, I think what people really would like to have is actually a separate segment between DizDev and actual fire called Call for Fire, which in my mind is like that it's not until A to B actually adds that as a segment, you know, not fire decision, but Call for Fire. I will not have that, you know. Of course, also I'm one of those people who is on the pure impulse activity, and I, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, that is when it comes to pure impulse activity, I came up with a solution which would solve the problem, and which was that pure impulse activity, just have it so that everybody who's playing has to click next. When they, you know, with that next impulse, next means is that I am done with all the activity that I have for this impulse. So no one knows that anyone else has activity. It's completely blind. That's 100% removes any metagaming aspect whatsoever. Now, that assumes that you don't do the whole call for fire crap in that context. If you do it, then okay, you still have the metagame concept. So, and actually, I had code in there to select different. You had, I think, at least two, if not three, different ways of operating. One was what currently is. I think the second one, I know the second one was, you know, the whole pure activity where everyone has to select next. And I think there was a third, and I can't remember off the top of my head what that was. But we're not here to talk about that long and winding road where people had or were really up in arms until Steve Cole basically said, okay, we're going to use call for fire is going to be the default for a tournament. You know, if no one... No, by default, if someone wants call for fire, you can use call for fire in tournament. Otherwise, if you both agree to pure impulse activity, okay, you can do that, which is what if you ever play tournament ships online using the client, that's one of the first things you have to discuss. After you discuss, okay, where you want to start, you know, do you want the top of the map or the bottom of the map? Let me see, when was it? It's been quite a few years ago now. Where Ken Burns says, oh, it should be easy just to flip it so that everyone, wherever they want, they're always at the top of the map. You know, and I'm going, in theory, that is true. In operation, not so much, because the biggest issue for that whole thing is that when you flip it, when you click the mouse, that changes the location of what you are clicking on. And that makes a big difference. But anyhow, to get back to the originally scheduled program, and that is tournament matchups. And with that, hey Barry.
Hey there.
How you doing?
You opened up a can of worms with that impulse activity versus
call for fire.
Yeah. Call for fire. Yeah. Whatever. I'm not gonna go there. What tournament ships did you want to match up today?
Which was IC versus Federation.
Okay.
I figured that's an interesting matchup because, of course, you got the firepower of the Federation. Now, remember, one thing that's a little different than in years past is that what they have done is they have added a G-Rack to the Federation. I have to double check the rules on that, whether how many drones it adds. Because I know it adds some anti-drones. But I forget how many regular drones it adds. Because it's got.
I thought they were banding about two drones and four anti-drones or something like that.
That sounds about right. Because it is, of course, da-da-da-da, four spaces. So.
Right.
So, of course, with the IC versus Federation, the biggest issue for the Federation, of course, and most people don't see this when they first look at the ship, but Lord knows, if you fly it, you see it real quick, which is, of course, the Fed has a power issue. It doesn't have... Yeah. Enough power to fully overload its photons and fly at a decent rate of speed.
Mm-hmm.
So, invariably, right. What happens with the Federation? The Fed has to, in some cases, just either charge as standard or a partial overload. Or
That is one of the nice things about the photons. You can partially overload it, or you could just overload two or three of them, fire them, and keep the fourth one is reserve, and then overload that on the next turn.
Exactly. Which, you know, the good part about that they only have so much power is that they can't fly around the board and just keep on bopping you with fully overloaded photons. Now, as big surprise, the first battle pass, that's a biggie for the Federation, because that's the one time where all they need to do is on the first turn to kind of top them off, because you do have overload energy points. I forget exactly what it's called, but basically it allows you to partially overload like all four, or fully overload two, and then
you have some overload energy.
Right, so you have some overload energy to start off with, and given that, you can top it off and still have enough power to actually, you know, have a good speed on first turn and also the first battle pass. Yeah. So and here's the one thing that always gets me, that you don't have to do, but people sometimes just do, which is, I think it's just moronic, which is they will fly head on to each other. It's like, why are you flying dead on your opponent? You know, I can understand some cases where you want get to your opponent as fast as possible because of the way your ship is. In the case of the Federation, that might be a good idea. But some other ships.
Yeah, well, the Fed has the advantage. Well, the problem that it needs to get to range two to have a decent hit percentage.
Right. Agreed.
And the ISC does not want to get that close at all.
That is true.
So the ISC is sitting there going, well, at longer range, I'm going to fire that PPD and some plasmas, hoping to discourage the Fed from closing to range two.
Very true. And of course, it doesn't have just that PPD to discourage that. It's got the plasma Gs. Now,
well, the PPD is just the way of damaging your shields, or eventually, once they're damaged, ripping your insides out and easily mesoing you to death.
Very true.
But the plasmas are just there to control the range.
Right. All right. Well, like I've pointed out in the past, which is seeking weapons like plasma or drones, their main goal is not to hit your opponent. The main goal of those weapons are to control your opponent, to act as mobile terrain, to force your opponent to go one way or the other way. Now,
basically, your opponent has to roll a saving throw versus being turned.
Right. Right. And and the thing is, of course, with the plasmas, like the larger plasmas, the Gs, the Ss, and the case actually of the King Eagle, the F, they get pseudos.
R.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. So the King Eagle does have pseudos for its Fs, yes.
Yeah, the Fs and the King are the only ones who get pseudos for the Fs.
Right.
So with that, that's when the opponent has to guess. If he launches, in this case of the IC, two G's, are those both real? And are you willing? Are you willing to take the chance that they're both real? And this is where it comes down.
Yeah.
Comes back to knowing your opponent. You know,
right?
If you play a certain player enough times, or read about how they play enough times, you get a feeling for how they usually play. Now, this is like stats in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
In that it can tell you what they've done in the past. It can is not a production, a pure predictive quality that says, yes, he'll definitely do this. You know, let's say he'll do it. It does it 90% of the time. Well, that, you know what that means? There's 10% that he might not. So,
what I usually do is I roll a die and say,
wow,
based on the die roll, that's what I'm going to do. So I don't
is
your, even
is yours
know.
A, is your, you do a 50-50 roll or?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Well, they,
yeah,
their cells aren't allowed in tournament play. That's why What's they that? Weren't allowed in tournament play.
That's not allowed strategy?
You're not allowed to use Narasavo in tournament
play. Oh, I'm not talking about Narasavo. I'm saying real or fake G. Which one do I launch? I roll a die.
Oh, so the idea is you're not predictable.
Yeah.
Well, that is an interesting idea. You know, of course.
Now, to truly make it unpredictable, it would be nice if you set it up so that you could do that die roll and not know which one, which way it went.
Yeah, well, at that point, in my mind, it doesn't matter. As long as you implement it, because as long as you follow through on what you roll as your die roll, it doesn't matter if you know or not.
Because, well, here's the thing. If you launch two fakes, you might behave differently than if you launch two reels.
Yeah, I'll just think through that same exact thing, which is, you always, it's one of those gotchas with pseudos, which is when you launch a pseudo, you have to sell it. You have to make it so that your opponent believes that it's a real torpedo.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, they will realize it is a fake torpedo and go
and run right through it. That's why the hidden die roll would be best, but there's no real way to do that.
Right. Agreed. There's nothing in the client that would allow you to do it. I'm not sure you'd... Because here's the thing. Even if you said, okay, I don't want it to tell me, it still has to record it that the pseudo has been used. So you can find out anyway. You know?
Well, you just don't look.
True. That's true. So... And here's one that's with the ISC. See, the thing is, the ISC only has G's versus S's. So the one's tactic when it comes to plasma, which I've tried to counter and it has not worked. And you can understand why, which is, on other plasma torpedoes where you actually have plasma S's, and what some plasma players will do is launch an enveloping plasma torpedo. So that's 60 mm-hmm. points. Now, some
or
people...
40 in the case of a G.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a moment. With an S, it's 60. And that means 10 boxes off each shield. So it's almost half on the rear boxes. It's a third off the front, all the front boxes. Now,
yeah,
I've quote unquote countered that by running right through it in the past.
To stay you can do very, that once.
Oh, I've done that more than once.
Well, yeah, but the second time you do that in the game, it hurts.
Was that? I'm sorry.
You can get away with that once in a game.
Oh,
but,
okay.
The second time you do that, yeah.
Okay, but I mean, I'm saying is that for multiple games I've done that, and invariably it doesn't work out for that very much because not the one of the times that I did do it with very much forethought, meaning that I thought I could get close enough to the, you know, I could surprise the I think there was a Romulan at the time opponent.
Yeah.
And get close enough to make him pay for getting, allowing me to get too close. And
right.
I missed it by like one or two hexes to get to the range mm-hmm. I needed to get to. So
well, the problem is that you run through the enveloper, and now he's got all those other plasmas that aren't enveloped that he can tell you with.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, now half your rear shields are gone, and a third of your front shields are gone. Over and
right.
And if you don't get in close,
you just wasted all those shields for naught.
Yep. Exactly.
And if you have to come in closer and then turn away, now you've really got the worst of it.
Yep. Oh, agreed. Now, against a Fed, obviously, the IC doesn't want to come close. So, at the very least, I'll be honest, I've never played the IC. I played the Fed a couple times. Invariably, I don't like it
mm-hmm.
just because of, mm-hmm. big surprise, the R-nothing kadunj, as my friend John DeWeese would say. He would go, kadunj. This is all powerful, you know, 16 points of damage from one photon. Yeah. He loved that about the photons.
They are nice that way, but their accuracy at anything above point blank is pitiful.
Oh, agreed. And I read an article. Jeez. 5 years ago, maybe more,
mm-hmm.
Where Bill Scheller, with his goal, he said at the very top of his article, which was, my goal is to get to range 2 on my opponent,
yeah.
And basically take whatever damage I have to take to, and get to range 2. Basically, that's obviously he has to be careful about how much he takes, which case, you know, that might require him to use his phaser ones as for defensive fire, might actually have to, in some cases, you know, actually not, you know, when you fire your phasers, then don't charge them. So you can get the speed to get into range 2. And of course, then there's
yeah.
the whole issue with plasma and getting, because you have to go through quite a bit of plasma to get to range 2. So, you know, since
That's the problem.
Yep. And what one thing, Bill.
Not,
yes. What were you saying?
You know, the ISC has a lot less plasma, but right. It does have that PPD.
Oh, agreed. But you know, he would run around these games without using his photons. You know, he would go like four turns without firing his photons to get, because his goal was get to that range to shot. You know,
mm-hmm.
because he figures if he could get those 60. If he gets range two, he could hit with enough photons to really cripple his opponent's ship.
If you have four photons left by that point.
Mike, to let you know, Barry's calling in on he's actually calling in to talk to you. But anyhow, yeah. So, you know, which I think is great, you know, it's a great plan. Now, how many people, remember, Bill Scheller is a rated ace. He is quite a skilled player. As is,
I agree.
As is one thing that some of the best players in SFB that are still playing actively and online, they set up a tournament called Aces of Aces. Got Peter Bakia, Bill Scheller, I forget who else. There's multiple people. Basically, these are multi-rated aces. Some of them are gold hat winners.
Yeah.
You know, and It's going to be very interesting. Well, Mike, and the funny thing is, Mike, you called in like 6 years ago. And of course, we've been going on, is it 11 years? Over 11 years. We'll be 12, doing the podcast for 12 years as of next April, I think it is, if I recall correctly, because the podcast has been going for a long time through the good and the bad of Talk Shoe. It has been on Talk Shoe for, ages. I think since I started, we've been doing it because I always wanted it to be an interactive thing. I didn't want me sitting there just chatting away of my own pontificating myself, you know. Now, that's different from other podcasts. But anyway, getting back to the IC versus Fed thing. Now, here's the question, though. Could the IC, because when it comes to knife fighting, I think the only... in my mind, the only ship that could survive a knife fight with the Federation is actually the Zinni.
What did I just say? The Zinni, yeah.
Yep. Because of the amount of internals that the Zinni has.
And all those P3s.
All those lovely P3s. But yeah, it's one of the few that actually could...
All the drones that it can launch mm-hmm. to tie up to all those phasers.
Yep. And who I forget what article I read this article. It was I forget which one it was. Whether it was, the person was playing the Zinni or the person was playing the Fed. Mm-hmm. I think about it, the person was playing the Zinni. In that. What happened is that they got hit full force with full fully overloaded photons. Mm-hmm. And they kept going. and they had enough ship left over after being hit with four fully overloaded photons to actually win the game.
Wow.
Actually, I'm not sure. Okay, I might be, maybe not win the game, but at the very least, they could continue playing. It wasn't a death knell. A lot of ships, if they get hit by four fully overloaded photons, that is their death knell.
It's over.
Because they'll cream that shield and then get a minimum of, 30 internals?
Something like that, yeah.
So, that's almost all the way to crippled. Now, if there happen to be any phasers along with that, you've got a crippled ship.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Or at least damaged.
Right. Really and, damaged. And the reason why the Zinni could survive is because of the number of internals it has. That's like 120 some internals versus some of the other ships. Because imagine like an Orion getting hit by four fully overloaded photons. It's dead. An Andromedan, if it goes against the front panels, it could survive as long as it doesn't get any phasers. But of course, since the Andromedan
itself has no distraction against the phasers.
Yes, exactly. In which case, it's dead. So,
my front panels are full and I'm not. It's over.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. So,
The only saving grace is that you can high energy turn, because if he didn't fire the phasers at the same time,
mm-hmm.
you could high energy turn and say, okay, now I can take the phasers on the rear panels.
Yep.
But it's still, now I've got the front's full and the rear's probably full, and it's like, now what do I do?
Oh, agreed. So actually, with the IC versus Federation, I would think that the ISC, the tough part about the ISC, of course, is the plasma. Because the plasma is a three-turn army weapon versus two.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, the ISC has another thing. It's got those rear Fs that it can only fire one per turn.
Correct.
So...
At the same time, I don't see that as much of a penalty per se, just because of...
No, it's not.
Because you think about most plasma players that have normal plasma Fs, how many times do you actually see them within the same turn launch two plasma Fs? How many times?
Rare. It's rare. Right. And the ISC's rear Fs are there for a different purpose. That's, I'm running away, don't follow me.
Exactly. Again.
Yeah, that's what they're there for.
Exactly. As as I mentioned, seeking weapons are there for mobile terrain. Trying to control.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the only thing that the Andromedan has to do the same thing, and which I have done, which is using the T-bomb as mobile terrain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the whole idea of, in the case of the Andromedan, using the T-bomb is just to get this a little bit of range, just a little bit extra range against your opponent. And to me, usually that's against the Orion. Because the Orion is the only ship that can keep up with the Andromedan and just keep on beating the crap out of every single turn. Because usually they use what's called the crate buster, which is all phasers except for one phaser, all phaser ones except for one phaser G. And
one G. Yep.
And that was after they said, okay, you only can have one phaser G. You can't have two phaser Gs.
Oh, I know.
I remember back...
Yeah, two G's is killer.
Yeah, remember... I was gonna say the bubble pig, but I don't think that was it. I think it's just, the octo, octopig. No, it was not octopig. But there was one where basically what you do is you put two phaser G's. I forget whether it was two phaser ones. I'm thinking about the Wynn auxiliary battle cruiser. Yeah, I know there was one that you could actually put two phaser, people would put two phaser G's on. Of course, there were some.
Yeah, the aux box.
Yeah, aux box is an interesting ship, and it will definitely, that's a matchup, the aux box with some other something else, which I'll have to think about. That's one we will be discussing in the future. I guarantee you that.
Oh yeah, and there's one particular variant of that that I have never been able to defeat.
Which is?
Putting eight drone racks in it.
Oh, the Octopig.
The
Yeah.
Octopig, yes.
That.
That is vicious. I've never been able to beat it.
That can be nasty
Problem is,
because it's goal. Its goal in life is to come in and then track your butt
yep.
and let
And
the
it's got all that
drones.
power to do.
Yep, all the power.
And you have two suicide shuttles ready to go. And now you launch six drones on the first turn, then you follow them in, or you lead them in, it doesn't matter. It's just keep feeding drones. And suicide shuttles, and you can't break the tractor.
Agreed.
There is nothing in the game that can stop 14 drones and two suicide shuttles.
I know. It's nuts.
Of course, I remember the one time I was like, I'll take the Hydra, that's a drone-proof ship, right? And he managed to tractor me once my fighter's still on board. Oh,
Oh, jeez.
that was bad.
Yeah, because in that case, you can't launch
Yeah.
them as fighters. The only thing you can launch at that point is suicide shuttles that are targeted on him.
Yes. Yes.
And they are caught in the tractor tunnel.
Tractor tunnel.
So if you're moving, you can kill your own suicide shuttles. Always lot that's always lots of fun.
Yeah, once I couldn't launch the fighters, it was game over.
Agreed. Agreed. But yeah, with the, I see the as I said, the tough part is a three turn arming plasma. Yes, you can beat up on the Fed with the PPD every single turn every other turn if you want to. But
Yes.
you have to be judicious about your launching of the plasma, in my mind, because of you want to keep the range. But to keep the range, you only could keep the range every three turns. Now, obviously, for the G torpedoes, you can fast load them as fast load Fs.
Yes.
Is the only saving grace, which is wonderful in that it allows
They
you,
hit just as hard.
not just as hard, but it allows you to launch the plasma and your opponent does not know if it's real or not because they're both the pseudo G and the
Same.
real F, both of them start as 20-point torpedoes. So it's not until five impulses in that you actually can tell whether it's a fake or not. And
Well, can you lab it to figure it out which
no,
one it is?
no, no. The only
Well, lab won't tell you if it's a pseudo or not, but it will tell you if it's a G or an F.
No, it won't. It just tells you the strength.
What?
You don't only get to know the strength. You'll get to know the type. And the strength is known. So, but of course, that means two things. The main thing is that either the Fed has become in on battle pass and has to make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
Because of he wants to get in closer than definitely closer than five hexes.
Oh yeah.
And so, or you know, if you're already close, the whole idea is to force the Fed into a decision of guessing. In that case.
Right.
And force him to either say, okay, I'm willing to take the 20 points of damage that if this thing's a real F, I'll take it. Or at the very least, use his phasers to knock it down. Now, if you knock it down using your phasers and it's a fake, it's pseudo G, you just wasted all those phasers. And he can still launch that fast F at you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's always the one thing that the IC has to keep in mind, which is when did he launch his plasma?
Mm-hmm.
So that he can make sure that he doesn't have a FUBAR. No, it's not a FUBAR. A faux pas. That's the term I'm looking for.
Right.
A football of going, you launch it. Well, that's got to be a pseudo because you launched the plasma G, the real G or F last turn. Whoops. You know.
Yeah.
So, to me, that means that there's two ways of playing IC against the Fed, which is, of course, one, which is most probable the way you're going to do it, which is come in as the IC, beat up on him, turn away, and then at least one G launched at the Fed. Turn away if the Fed still comes in, launch the F, and keep running away. Now,
right.
There's always a gotcha in maneuvers like that, which is you are giving up initiative. You're saying, okay, I'm done. I'm running away. So no, you no longer control the situation as much because, you know,
yeah.
as I said, you're running away versus attacking. But I don't see much choice in that regard.
I'm starting to fall asleep here.
Okay.
Sorry, it's last night I had a 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. shift.
Mm-hmm.
My whole schedule is just screwed up.
Understood. Okay, well, I'll let you go then, Barry. You have a good night.
I will. Thank you.
Okay. So I'll continue on. Now, the other one, of course, is more of a saber dance approach. Now, which is as the Fed comes in, and this is assuming that the Fed comes straight in. The Fed comes straight in, you come in, and you try to hit him on the oblique. If you hit him on the oblique, basically hit him. Side slip away, and if he turns in, then you could turn away. The idea is you're still launching the plasma when he is coming in. Now, and if you're going to do that, what I would more likely do if you're going to go for the cyber dance approach, is that you're going to envelop the G, have it so that if the Fed really wants you and he's going to turn in, you can turn away. He has to deal with the G. And then if it keeps coming in close enough, you go, okay, fine. You launch one of your rear Fs, and he keeps coming in. Now, this is the thing. The first, when it comes to any tournament battle, or any battle, period, the first battle pass is the easiest. It's after the first battle pass that everything goes, because here is the gotcha, which is, what some players have a issue, which is they don't plan on what happens after the battle pass, because after the battle pass is what's important. How do you set up for the next battle pass, or at the very least set up yourself up for the defensive posture that will save your butt? In the case of Plasmid, obviously Plasmid, the one thing they usually like to do is launch their plasmas and run away. You have to deal with it, and then when the timing is right, when they can get you into a position where you can't fire, they can. That's when they beat you with their phasers. I'm assuming you're not going against it like a Zinni, where you're gonna be using those phasers. You're gonna be using them against the drones, or you can, then we can talk about wild weasels. But that's not this situation, because we're talking about the Fed versus the IC. That means the Fed has one currently at this moment in time. It's got one drone rack, so it's more of an annoyance of anything. It can be used to extract certain amount of phaser, use of phasers, and therefore decrease the amount of power that you have overall in the game. But that, I think it's not that consequential at this moment in time. I think the big change when it comes to the Fed and the GRAC is more for on the other side of the fence, as it's facing other drone-based opponents. And, of course, it could be quite nice against the Hydran. It could be helpful against that because, of course, the ADRAC against a shuttle can do quite a bit of damage. But of course, when it comes to the Hydran, you're not going to want to do that with the fighters that much, because if the fighters get that close, you're in trouble. Yep. And Mike's just mentioning that, some follow-up that matters. And I agree that the follow-up does matter, because of, okay, after you turn, you've given up initiative. He's going to follow you. Now, how do you get your nose, which is where most your weapons are, they face forward. What do you do now? Because what you've got to do is you got to figure out a way of turning around. Because when you turn around, what's going to happen when you turn around is that if your opponent is closing in on you, if you're going this way, he's coming this way, you have to go much faster than he's going as when it comes to those arc to stay in front of him, to stay ahead of him. So at some point you can turn and come and have it so that obviously you're going to be facing him dead on, but you can get your weapons in his. Now, of course, if he wants to, especially given the ISC, if he wants to, the Fed can actually come up behind, which is fine for him. Now, that's why you launch the plasma, so he doesn't want to follow behind, because of the plasma forces him either to stop, but I doubt, turn away, which is most probably what he'll do, or phaser it down. Now, that's why, in the case of the IC, if you plan on not kind of firing and turning away from him so he follows you that way, versus turning this way so he will turn in to follow you, you know, and you're going kind of past him. In the case of a passive, you want more of an enveloper approach, because of he will not come in to follow you. He most probably will turn away. Now, what you're hoping, this is what you're hoping, is that doesn't want to go away too far, which is what will happen in that case. He'll be firing his phasers to reduce the plasma, so that he hits him for some damage, but doesn't hurt him that much. And that's thing I was trying to point out and didn't get to until now, about the G's versus the S's. The G's have 40, the S's have 60. So 40 divided by 6 is approximately 6 per, with 4 more. And if I recall correctly, those 4 extra, the person who owns the plasma, who controls the plasma, can define where it goes. It's not up to the opponent who gets hit, which is, I think, how the Hellbore does. So, in the case of the rear, you're only putting it down by a quarter, versus before you're closer to half. You're less than half, yes, like 40% versus 50. But when it comes to a plasma S, which is 60 points, but at the same time, the Fed can't just ignore it and just fly through it. Because how many of you would actually want 40 points around your shields at no cost to your opponent? Because it recharges plasma, big deal. But he's beating you. And of course, with the ISC, what's the first thing he does before that plasma would hit is he's going to bink, bink, bink. He's going to pin you for at least 4 impulses, and if I recall correctly, it's 2-1-1 for the ranges we're talking about, which I think it's 4-10. If I got this wrong, I apologize. But for 4-10, it's 2-1-1. I think it's 2-1-1. I think it's 2-1-1 because the best range is like 4-1-1, which is nasty. Which is, of course, the wraparound, 2-2-1-1. So you can do 8 points of damage on the facing shield, and then an additional 4 for the sides. So 8 plus 6, probably 7, that's half your shield is gone. As he turns away from you, you want one of your shields completely, half a shield. Now, obviously, you can, as a Federation player, you can actually but you can reduce that by making sure that you get a second shield. Now, what might that require? Oh, turning away or turning towards. It all depends on if he's hitting you right when you're coming up on the oblique, he's giving you a choice. Because if he's coming up right on the oblique, you have it so that it's that the PPD is hitting his shield number 6 and keeps hitting shield number 6 until he turns in, so shield number 1 faces, or turns away and shield number 5 faces. So you've given them a choice. But when at that point, then of course you've also launched a plasma G, so he has to make up his choice. And if it's a 40 point, will he want to come in after he's gotten all that PBD damage? Probably not. So, now, let's go to the opposite side. Let's end with the opposite side when it comes to what does the Fed do? obviously, but the Fed's going to want to do it. I think actually, Bill Shiller's approach is a good approach. Try to get to that range two. If you can get to the range two. Now, the tough part about that with plasma is, of course, you're going to have to go through a lot of plasma to get to that point. But if you want to, you're going to also play the dice. If you really want to, you can play the dice. Personally, I would not. Because, as I think Bill Shiller points out quite nicely, and that is that if you get to range two, the idea is you're trying to limit the percentage chance of missing because of, as I pointed out at the beginning of this podcast, if you are a Fed and you fire your photons and you want to recharge your photons, it's going to take a lot of power. And you know those pesky plasmas? They're going to catch up with you. So at that point, what's going to be your choice? You have one choice. Wild Weasel. Now you're stopped. So your tactical situation went from bad to worse. You know, going from moving around slowly to being completely stopped. And we completely stopped. Now, the IC can go, okay, see ya, and flies away. Now, obviously, he won't, after you've launched the Wild Weasel, he's launched the plasmas, you know, he's going away with charge anyway. But as I said, I think the idea of keeping up your speed, of course, talk to Mr. When I fly a Saltorian, I prefer the option to fly fast, to deal with drones, deal with plasma with speed. That is what I like to do, because I feel like speed gives me initiative. Speed lets me have control. Speed is what will give me the advantage and allow me to deal with things better than using a Wild Weasel. Now, just like the Fed, the Saltorian has the same issue. Doesn't have enough power. Yeah, the Saltorians let you know, when it comes to Saltorians, I like the Saltorians. But there's one key thing that I really like about the Saltorians. Obviously, I like the Shield Crackers, which are kind of nice, because they do 4 points of damage, and they actually hit during the shield step, shield segment. So that is kind of interesting. But the one thing I really love and about the Saltorian, the particle cannons. I don't like the leaky capacitors. So you have to put half the energy into it to keep the other half of the energy in there. Weird. But it is what it is. But what I really like about the Saltorian is that at the point of fire, you get to decide what you're using. Is it going to be standard or is it going to be overload? You get to decide. Even if you have overload energy, you can say, I'm going to fire standard. And if you plan it right, you can actually fire two standards versus one overloads. If you know, within the same term, because firing the second standard costs 1 point of energy. Firing the first standard costs 2 points of energy, or you can fire overload for 3 points of energy. So it makes things interesting. I have to read up on the rules again when it comes to the multi-firing. Obviously, it's a 12 impulse difference between the first fire and the second fire, which makes things difficult. But at the same time, I know they originally had a rule, and I'm not sure if it's still there, when it comes to standard, like you can't fire standard first and then fire overload. You can fire overload first and fire standard later, but you can't do the opposite. I'm not if I remember that correctly. Yeah, Mike. Yeah, definitely. Read up on the particle cannon, because that's the one thing I really like about the Saltorian is the particle cannons. Obviously, the one thing that downside of the Saltorian is it has same issue the Andromeda has. It has no way of distracting the opponent. Yeah, you got suicide shuttles if you want to, but even those are minor inconveniences compared to something faster like a drone or a fighter or a plasma torpedo. So with that, I think I will close it up for this evening. Dave, Mike, I think you even saw Iggy there. And of course, Chris. No, I didn't see Iggy. Oh, I did see Iggy. And also Russ. Thank you for joining me in the chat room on Twitch. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.